Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, January 23, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Hester of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, more nations are signing on to Canada's WTO complaint against U.S. corn subsidies. Also, a seventh round of free trade talks between the U.S. and South Korea is scheduled for next month. And Cuba is now saying no thanks to U.S. agricultural products. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, USDA plant pathologist Glenn Hartman will talk about Asian soybean rust concerns for the 2007 growing season. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City March wheat. $5.75 up 13.75. May, $5.06.5 up 6.5. At the Board of Trade in Chicago, March wheat, $4.80.25 up 15.25. May, $4.93 up 14.25. July, $5.25 up 13.25. March corn, $4.09 up 4.75. May, $4.20.25 up 4.25. July, $4.25.5 up 3.25. December, $4.02.75 up 6.25. March beans, $7.27.25 up 10. May, $7.42 up 9.25. July, $7.54.75 up 9. November, $7.78.5 up 9.75. March soybean meal, $2.10.30 up 1.10. March soybean oil, $29.93 up 62. At the Merck, January feeders, $94.45 up 2.5. February live cattle, $89.57.5 down 67.5. February lean hogs, $61.80 up 85.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
Here's something I don't think I've said in a long time. Wheat was the leader at the Chicago Board of Trade.
Yeah, wheat was the leader today. I think a lot of it on concerns. There was considerable fund buying in the wheat or moderate fund buying in the wheat today, and I think it was the leader, as you stated, and I think part of the fund buying was on concern that there's not much snow cover on this wheat and the cold weather coming in this weekend. There could be some freeze damage to it, and then that spilled on over, you know, into the grain market on basically buying the rumor on what President Bush is going to say tonight on biofuels and ethanol, and basically, other than that, there was no great news in the on the grain side of it today, other than anticipation of Bush's speech tonight.
It looks to me, as I look at the numbers, John, that we might have seen on winding of short wheat, long corn spreads. Would you say that was the case?
I think that's a possibility. I talked to a guy I know on the floor, and he did not mention that, but that is a definite possibility because a lot of people had been long corn and short wheat, and, you know, I think we noticed yesterday that there was a lot of corn spreads and being unwound yesterday, and that was probably carried over today in the wheat a little bit, but I think most of it was just on, or a lot of it was on fund speculative buying on this weather concerns coming in, and, you know, we've been in a trading range and the bottom of the range held, and now we're going the other way, going to test the top of the range.
And we've certainly tested and went through the top of the range in soybeans today. It made a new contract high, 779 and a half on the back end Novis.
Yes, you know, I think that's reference to Bush's speech tonight, and they cannot afford to lose too many acres of soybeans to corn, so they got to keep soybean prices going up in accordance with corn. You know, we cannot afford to lose 7 or 8 million acres or 9 million acres of soybeans to corn. That could cause a huge bean explosion, especially if something would happen to the South America crop in the next couple months.
Does this signal a breakout of what was potentially a pennant formation developing in the Novis to the topside?
It appears that way, yes. You know, the pennants don't always, you know, unfold, I mean, pan out. But, yes, it is a breakout, and that is very friendly. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens tonight and tomorrow. I mean, I think, you know, this is the first time in history that these corn has ever closed over $4.
But John, I'm looking for $5 cash. I don't want to pull the trigger just yet.
Well, I don't know. $4 may be a gift. Maybe somewhere in between 4 and 5 would be a nice place to sell.
And what about action over at the Merck today?
Okay, the on the meat side of things, it was moderate volume. Cattle were lower on. Fund selling limits were losses were limited on anticipation of lower placements coming out on Friday. You know, the weather and everything else is a concern about that. Cash hogs were higher on spec buying and also on the cold storage report that was less than anticipated yesterday, and that also carried over into the pork bellies. Being up a little bit today.
So what are you telling producers, and I mean grain and livestock both, at the moment regarding these price levels and what kind of things that they should be doing about it?
Well, basically on the grain side of it, especially in the corn, these are lofty prices, and a person, when he's comfortable with a price up in this neighborhood, I think he should be selling a certain percentage of his crop, whether it's 5, 10, 20% of it. He should be taking a little of this $4 a bushel money that they're offering. You know, whether he wants to sell it 4 or 4.10. You know, and if he's not comfortable with doing that, he at least ought to protect it with maybe putting a floor underneath it by buying a put.
What do you like, a 360, 380 put area?
Yeah, I think whatever. And, you know, at these lofty prices, I think you can afford to give away a little of your profit, you know, as close to the money as you can afford,
mm-hmm.
you know, for protection. And if you've already sold grain at a cheaper price and, you know, you're unhappy with it, possibly a guy should protect the upside from here with a call. So if it does happen to go to $5, you can still participate in the rise in price, even though you've already sold the grain.
And
beans, you know, I don't know. The beans, everybody you read thinks beans are too high, you know. But really, if corn keeps going up, I think beans have got to follow to a certain extent. I don't think beans are going to go down 50, 60 cents if corn goes up 20. So, you know, I think beans are a follower just because they need the bean acreage. They can't afford to lose too many bean acres to the corn. So I think long-term, you know, I made the comment this morning, I think some month in the beans we'll probably have an 8 in front of it before the highs are put in this year.
And we'll be watching for that. Thank you much, John.
All right, thank you. Nice talking to you.
You too. John Hester of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Taking a look at Mike Sola's Tuesday forecast tonight, he says, look for it to be mostly cloudy with snow showers and flurries, accumulation of an inch or two possible in west central Illinois. Lows from 15 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries. Highs from 27 to 40 degrees. The extended outlook, frequent weak weather disturbances will rotate into the area over the next week and bring occasional chances for light precipitation. Northern and central sections will receive light snow and flurries. Temperatures in the south will be warming enough to change the snow to sleet and, at times, light rain. In agricultural news, add more nations to the growing list of WTO complainants against U.S. corn subsidies. Yesterday, the European Union and Australia added their voices to Canada's original charge that U.S. corn subsidies unfairly and illegally deflates international corn prices and fails to comply with international trade rules. Argentina, Brazil, and Guatemala have also signed on to Canada's complaint. An official WTO investigation could begin as early as April 8th. The date, a three-month consultation period on the issue, will expire. Spokespersons for the U.S. Trade Representative have not discussed the growing list of countries taking exception to U.S. corn subsidies, but earlier were critical of Canada's original complaint. Cuban officials have informed U.S. suppliers that they will shift about $300 million in food purchases away from the U.S. and toward what they term friendlier countries, including Vietnam, China, Argentina, and Brazil. The head of Cuba's state import agency says efforts to get Washington to ease a U.S. embargo has not achieved the desired results. AFBF Congressional Relations Director Chris Garza.
There are many hoops that U.S. agriculture has to jump through in order to be able to sell goods to Cuba. I don't think it necessarily is just the cash in advance issue. I think it's kind of a frustration overall with the process that's involved in order for us to get U.S. commodities down to Cuba. And so, therefore, the Cubans have decided that they, at least at this point, have just made an announcement that they could look to other sources to fill their food needs.
Last year, the Bush administration began requiring Cuba to pay for agricultural goods before shipment instead of arrival in Cuba. Garza fears a congressional backlash against Cuba's decision to buy agricultural goods elsewhere.
My fear is that this could potentially backfire on the Cubans because our number one argument when we work this issue, when U.S. agriculture works this issue, is that we are selling goods to Cuba, and we are selling a significant amount. Obviously, with the Cubans' threat of buying less from the United States, it obviously weakens our position on the Hill.
Cuba has been buying food from suppliers in about 30 U.S. states in an attempt to get suppliers and state governments to put pressure on Congress and the Bush administration to discuss the U.S. embargo. U.S. and South Korean negotiators plan a seventh round of bilateral free trade talks beginning February 12th. Chief U.S. negotiator Wendy Cutler says significant progress has been made in a number of areas, including market access and tariffs. Tough issues remain, including automobiles, pharmaceuticals, and trade remedies. Under rules set by Congress, a deal must be reached no later than March 30th in order to qualify for presidential fast-track authority. FTA requires Congress to vote up or down on trade deals without offering amendments. Livestock industry groups are urging USDA to study the effect of the growing biofuels industry on meat production. In a letter to USDA Secretary Mike Johanns, livestock groups say that many producers fear they cannot sustain their operations competing with, and this is from the letter, a growing and robust ethanol economy. Iowa State University livestock economist John Lawrence says there will be changes in the industry.
I think we're going to see people exit, and this time I think it will be as it has oftentimes in the past. The people that grow corn and hogs are looking that maybe they could take the winters off. And I think we'll see some people that give up the livestock and just go to selling corn. We are still seeing, at least as before the ground froze up, buildings being built in some parts of the country, partly driven by the high energy cost in the form of fertilizer. And we had corn growers that 10 years ago or 5 years ago literally turned up their noses at hog buildings are now saying, can you build one of those finishers on my farm because I need the fertilizer on this quarter section or half section.
Iowa State University livestock economist John Lawrence. A bipartisan group of senators is asking the Internal Revenue Service to reverse its proposed rule that would force landowners to pay self-employment taxes on Conservation Reserve Program payments. Since 1986, CRP payments have been treated as rental income, which is not subject to self-employment taxes. In December, the IRS issued a proposed rule that would tax CRP payments at 15.3%. In the last several years, farmers and ranchers have been hit hard with hurricanes, wildfires, and droughts. Now add freezes and blizzards to the list. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
From the frozen citrus crop in California to blizzard-stranded livestock in Colorado, weather disasters are already taking their toll on farmers and ranchers in this new year.
These latest weather disasters have renewed in people's minds how important it is that we step in and help farmers with that.
American Farm Bureau Farm Policy Specialist Mary Kay Thatcher says work has already started on Capitol Hill to draft new legislation to address disaster assistance.
Unfortunately, we'll be at the point now we'll be on the Hill asking for disaster assistance for 2005 and 2006 and 2007.
Thatcher says she thinks farmers and ranchers will eventually get that assistance, partly because more and more areas have been hurt by destructive weather. But
we're probably looking at not being able to get this passed until sometime in the March-April timeframe. So it will be important for our farmers across the country, even if their disaster occurred back in 2005, to continue to talk to their members of Congress about the need for this assistance.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
EU Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson says a deal to restart the Doha round of world trade talks could happen Saturday at a meeting of trade ministers. Mandelson says the Democrat leadership in the U.S. Congress has, in his words, indicated to us that they would back the Doha round. Still, Mandelson warned failure is a distinct possibility. Mandelson says USDA and the Bush administration have not given permission to seriously resume talks at the ministerial level. And Swift & Company has initiated a review of its assets that could lead to the sale of the company, a merger, or possible public stock offering. Swift hired J.P. Morgan Chase to conduct the review. Company officials say the review is being initiated because of unsolicited inquiries over the past 6 months from several outside parties, as well as what a press release termed the currently robust capital market conditions. Swift & Company is the fourth largest meat company in the world. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Since arriving in the U.S. over 2 years ago, Asian soybean rust has done little damage to crops in the Delta and virtually no damage to soybeans planted in the central and upper Midwest. ASR first arrived in the U.S. in November of 2004. The Economic Research Service says whether or not it does damage in the future is dependent on a wide range of factors, including timing, location, spread, severity, and how producers respond to rust outbreaks. Glenn Hartman is a plant pathologist for USDA, and he joins us now to discuss soybean rust potential for 2007. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. Good afternoon.
Nationally speaking, soybean rust has pretty much been a non-event the last 2 years.
Absolutely, and that's very fortunate for us.
But you're suggesting producers should not be lulled to sleep.
No, we don't really have a long history with rust. As you mentioned, it first came in 2004, and it may take quite a few years before we really understand how potentially this could be devastating to our crop.
How has the weather played out down south, and what is the implications?
Well, you have to understand a little bit about the biology and the overwintering capacity of this fungus. It needs a living host to overwinter, and of course, our temperate climate means that we don't have any soybeans around that are living in the fields. But there is another plant called kudzu, an invasive weed that stays green in parts of the Gulf Coast states.
And the implications of that is?
Well, that the implications really are that's where the fungus is going to overwinter. And as it overseasons on that particular host and the range that it overseasons, in other words, from Texas to Florida, where this host occurs, it can cause a buildup of spores, or what we call inoculum, that can be blowing south either early in the spring or middle of the summer.
And essentially, since January, or even earlier, it's been relatively mild down in southern states. Don't think there's been a hard freeze. And so the implications are that we're seeing Asian soybean rust spores appear on more kudzu earlier than in previous years?
Well, the whole winter hasn't played out yet, Dave, but it's certainly likely that what we know now, it is in more counties and in more kudzu sites than it was in the previous 2 years, indicating that it has spread. And it really just depends on how far some of these north blasts go down south and whether they'll freeze the kudzu out or not.
It's been pretty wet down there. That's probably supportive of Asian soybean rust as well, I would think.
Yeah, the moisture is important. Right now we're reporting 5 counties in Florida, 5 counties in Georgia, and 5 counties in Mississippi, all with positive sightings of rust on kudzu.
Do researchers still believe that Asian soybean rust will march up the Mississippi Valley, and sort of step, and not skip very large geographical regions?
It's conceivable that it could occur either way, but it's really based on how many spores are produced. In other words, the greater the spore numbers, the more likelihood it is that it could be marching further north. And that really is just dependent on weather. Last year, as you know, we had 8 counties in Illinois and southern Illinois that became positive with rust, all on late-planted soybeans of no economic loss at all to the soybeans. But if that were 2 months earlier, that would have been a different story.
So if I'm a producer here in Illinois, what states do I need to keep an eye on, generally speaking, and where do I keep an eye on them, generally speaking?
Well, I think what you want to do, if you're a grower here, is to make sure you're plugged into websites that have the map of the soybean rust and where it is occurring. And just keep in touch with, that particular map, because that'll tell you if it's just staying in the southern states or if it actually is moving up through Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, and so forth. And it'll be, depending on the season. If it's September and you're near harvest, it's going to be of no consequence.
And where do I find these maps on the web?
Well, the best site really is this www.sbrusa.net. And that is the official USDA site that keeps the map of where soybean rust occurs.
What research is going on about applications of fungicides at the moment?
There's been quite a few different projects going on with application of fungicides, everything from looking at different spray tips, different pressures, different speeds of application, different fungicides, for example. Some of the research has been done in different countries because they've had rust longer, for example, in Brazil and also in some of the African countries.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us.
Okay, Dave, thank you.
That's USDA plant pathologist Glenn Hartman.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Champaign School District has decided to put off a vote on hiring an additional police school resource officer until spring due to budget constraints. That means the school district will continue to use 5 SROs to cover 6 middle and high school buildings. Champaign Police Lieutenant Joe Gallo says it's too early to cite statistics, but he believes the officers are having positive interactions with students and that their presence has led to improvements in some of the neighborhoods surrounding the schools. Kraft Foods says it will sell its hot cereal business, including the popular Cream of Wheat brand, for $200 million. The buyer is New Jersey-based B&G Foods. The cream of wheat brand had a net revenue of $60 million, and Northfield-based Kraft says it expects to record a pre-tax charge of $69 million for the deal. The sale needs regulatory approval. Kraft has a food processing facility in Champaign. Cream of wheat products are not made there. Attorneys made opening arguments in Springfield today in a racial discrimination lawsuit. Two former black officers say the capital city and its police department retaliated against them for speaking out about racial problems, while city officials say they did nothing wrong. A top Indiana state senator wants to shift more of local government's property tax burden to the state. Republican Senate Tax Chairman Luke Kenley of Noblesville is creating a plan that would shift some education, juvenile detention, and child welfare costs to Indiana state government. Local governments could raise income taxes to make up for shortfalls. 30 states, including Illinois, have reached a settlement with Bayer over allegations the drug maker failed to adequately warn consumers about risks of a cholesterol-reducing drug. The $8 million settlement was announced today. Chicago's Olympic bid organizers have released more details about their plans to woo the 2016 Games to the city. The proposal includes building a billion-dollar athletes' village and a $366 million temporary stadium and a park on Chicago's south side. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Support for WILL is provided in part by Risk Management Commodities, presenting an agricultural outlook meeting on Saturday, January 27th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Holiday Inn in Terre Haute, Indiana. Lunch will be provided. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
We're just talking with USDA plant pathologist, I think his name is, what is his name again? Oh, yes, Glenn Hartman. And he was talking about how wet it was down south and how we haven't had a good hard freeze down south and the potential that we might see Asian soybean rust a little bit earlier than usual. I wonder about the same question for Brazil as it continues to wetten up there.
Yeah, and first of all, in terms of that question about the hard freeze, we might see that down south in the next 10 days.
Ah.
Now, going back even further south, into Brazil, it still looks moist. The shower activity is going to continue down there. An active weather pattern and temperatures averaging right around or just even a little bit below normal. So the trend of wet weather in both Brazil and Argentina is going to continue.
And at some point, are we going to suggest that there's too much moisture?
I think with another week of it, we probably will be in that position. And the patterns that have developed here over the last couple of weeks have been hard to get rid of in both hemispheres. And it seems like we're setting the pattern here for a little bit longer. So there is, I will say this, though, there is a trend later in the forecast, maybe 12 to 14 days down the road, that looks a little bit warmer and drier down there. But up until then, it's still going to be moist.
Would you ship some of that moisture to India, please?
No kidding. Unfortunately, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer when it comes to moisture. Not much in the way of any really good chances anywhere in India for moisture. Now, Australia, which in some areas has been able to pick up a little bit more rain, some of the central and northeastern areas of Australia will be getting some moisture.
Is the wheat crop now in jeopardy in India, in your estimation?
Definitely. And it is not surprising that they have hit a dry stretch of weather, the way the water temperatures in the Pacific have behaved. Even though we have a weak El Nino, one thing we do see sometimes is a dry pattern setting up there. And right now, it looks like it's going to be hard to shake.
Looks like over the past week or so, on my window coming into work, there's been a flake or two. Are we going to see kind of a daily shower pattern through the end of the month?
Well, we are going to be colder. The late next week, next weekend, and into the first few days of February, we're getting some indications there could be a release of some pretty significant cold across most of the nation again. It may be stronger than some of the cold surges that came in earlier this month, and it bears watching. If this pattern does unfold, it certainly is obviously going to be a lot colder, may not necessarily bring a lot of moisture. The type of pattern that would develop would bring light amounts of snow, but not heavy. But this occasional pattern of light precipitation will probably continue, although the amounts will be not very heavy.
Brutal cold is how I would characterize it, maybe. And I wonder what will you need to see for the forecast to verify?
Well, right now I would say that based on the way the pattern has gone the last 6 weeks, the way the jet stream has behaved, odds are pretty high from what we're seeing that indeed that cold air will cut loose. It's going to depend. I think what we're looking at now is not if we're going to get the Arctic air. It's just a matter of where the coldest, most intense air mass of that cold will end up setting up. Will it end up out west? Will it end up in the Plain States here in the Midwest or a little bit further east? That is still in question. But I don't think it's, from what we're seeing, there's any doubt that we are headed towards colder weather for the last few days of this month and a cold start to February.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. This is Dave Dickey.